You're listening to Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, here with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell, and we're here to bring out the best in your pet's behavior. So if you need help solving a problem, big or small, give us a call now. Here's the number, 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And in addition to the calls, we have another special topic to share.
Hey, Mueller, do you remember Garfield, the cartoon cat?
Yeah, I do.
Well, you know, if you think about Garfield, unless you have a piece of, spaghetti in your hand, he'd basically rather be left alone.
That's right. Right.
So this hour, we're going to talk about cats and how social they really are.
And if you have a flabby lab or a chubby pug, or maybe you simply need to find new ways to stay fit yourself, we'll welcome a veterinarian to the program who can help you find new ways to get active with your dog. But before we do that, let's take a few calls. And here's our first caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is April from Seward, Alaska.
April, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a 5-year-old cat that's got, I don't know if it's a unique situation or not, I think that she sees ghosts.
That might be unique if that's really true. What is she doing?
Well, I understand that cats stare at the wall and stare off at random things that may or may not really be there. But when she's laying around bathing or I'm on the floor playing with her, anything really, she'll look up over my shoulder.
Yeah.
Her eyes will bug out and she'll just run and hide under the bed behind the dresser. And the thing is, she's not a real spazzy cat.
Okay.
She's okay with dogs, loud noises, and children, so it's kind of odd.
Do you ever hear, ooh, in the background?
And the rattling of chains. Right? Does she orient in a particular direction before she runs away? Does she look at something, or does she just sort of startle and then run away?
Usually she looks up over my shoulder.
Behind you. Oh, well, then it's behind you. We've established that.
That's why you don't see it.
Well, and the reason I ask that is because I know situations in which it appears the best explanation is that a cat or sometimes even a dog is moving, and in such a way, something hurts. You know, even with our own bodies, sometimes you move and you get a little shooting pain in your foot or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the animal startles and then runs away. Because one of the things we know is that if there's an unexpected sharp pain, an animal often associates it with the location that they're in. So they think, you know, there's something dangerous about that area. So they startle and then they run away. And they run away from that area. So there's always a possibility that there's this actually medical, not necessarily that it's a problem, but there's some kind of physiological or anatomical explanation that's a lot less, certainly a lot less exotic than the ghost hypothesis. I don't mind the ghost hypothesis. I think that's sort of fun. Have you seen anything strange?
I have not.
Okay.
The only other possibility is that there's a sound, and actually, you know, this is probably the most likely possibility, given that cats' hearing is attuned to extremely high frequency sounds. Cats can hear sounds much higher than we can, and much higher than dogs can, as a matter of fact. So she might be hearing, who knows, you know, something in the wall. She might be hearing a bat in the attic. She might be hearing, in my farmhouse, she might have been hearing a mouse in the walls. So it might be related to a sound that she can hear and you can't.
Okay.
That makes sense.
And maybe they're ghosts who
and
only talk
ghosts
on cat frequencies and not people frequencies.
Thanks, April.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Tricia, we received an email from Tammy in Middleton, Wisconsin. She has this question. How can I get my dog to bark or hit a bell hanging on the door to let me know she has to go out? Right now, she just sits within 5 feet of the door and stares at me. And if I'm not in the room, I don't know that she wants to go out.
Well, you know, that is a great question. And I have two answers. And the first one is, I suggest that you think very carefully about whether you really want to teach your dog to basically teach you on cue to learn that he or she can make a signal that gets you up out of the couch, out of the bed, out of your chair, and goes and opens the door for them. And the reason I say that is I've had so many clients and I know so many people whose dog has learned to either bark or scratch at the door or ring a bell to go out. But the dog doesn't learn, I can do that to go outside to go potty. What the dog learns, understandably, is I can do that to get my human to get up, pay attention to me, or I can get them to get up, pay attention to me, and go outside with me. And what I really want to do is go outside and chase squirrels. So I don't always recommend that. I basically suggest that we're the ones who keeps track of whether our dogs need to go out, and let them out whenever you think there's a slightest possibility they need to go. But I do know people who've trained their dogs, and you can train your dog. I think the ideal thing is a bell by the door, not barking. Teaching your dog to bark to go out can often be a bad
big
idea.
Problem.
Because then you call in and say, my dog barks all the time and won't stop. What do I do? And we say, how did it start? And you say, well, I taught him to bark. So the bell at the door is a better idea. And this one's really easy. You buy a little bell, put it at nose height at the, on the frame of the door, not the part of the door that opens. And then smear a tiny little bit of food, just a tiny bit, not much, just one little tiny lick of food on the bell such that the dog noses the bell so that it rings. But as soon as they've nosed and licked once, there's no more food there. Because otherwise your dog is going to just stand for 5 minutes licking the bell, right? What you want is your dog to sort of nuzzle the bell, get it to ring, and then you open the door and take the dog outside and then give it a treat when it goes outside and goes potty. So the idea is if you ring the bell and you go outside and go potty, I will give you a treat. So it's all about going potty. And then gradually you start doing less food and waiting for the dog. You can go to the door when you know your dog needs to go to the bathroom, like first thing in the morning, and then go to the door, stand there, and sort of look at your dog. Your dog will look at you. And basically what you're trying to communicate is, I can't open the door until you ring the bell. So you can point to it. You can sort of tap the frame of the door right beside the bell. Do everything you can to have the dog initiate ringing the bell without there being food on it. And then you take the dog out, dog goes potty, you give it a treat. And so gradually, usually after a couple of weeks with a really, really smart dog, or a couple of months with, you know, your basic dog, then you've got a dog who rings a bell to go outside to go potty.
That makes good sense.
It works.
And, you know, you have great answers to these email questions, and if only people knew the email address, we'd even have more.
Well, you know, and we would love to have more. We love it when people email. Send us an email to pets@wpr.org. That's pets@wpr.org.
And if you'd like to talk to us in person, here's that number, 1-800-462-7413. And here's our next caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Courtney from Fort Smith, Arkansas.
Courtney, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, about 6 months ago, we were adopted by a cute little kitty that we named Polly Put the Kettle On. And recently, we bought a new house, and we're going to be taking this outside cat and moving her to a new territory that's also outside. And it's in the country, but on one side of the property, it's a pretty busy two-lane road.
Oh.
Yeah, but in our neighborhood, she's very good about avoiding streets.
Okay. Well, it's risky. I need to tell you, this is really, really risky. So one alternative that you might want to just think about, just file it away and think about, is building her like a big screen porch or sort of a kitty yard. People more and more are starting to build cat yards, just like, you know, we have fenced yards for dogs. So that's certainly one possibility. There's also the underground fencing that has been developed for dogs, that works for some dogs, not for others, I should say, but it does work for some dogs, has apparently now been developed for cats. I have no personal experience with it, but that's a situation where your cat wears a little collar, and if she gets too close to a boundary where there's a buried wire, she gets a little shock. And the good systems, the animal first gets a sound warning. So that the good systems, and if they're trained correctly, they only get shocked once or twice. I won't pretend. Of course it's uncomfortable. I mean, I love that when some of the companies will describe it as a vibration. Well, you know, if it's not uncomfortable, then it won't work. But that's one possibility. I would be very cautious about that just because I haven't had a lot of experience with it, but it's something you might want to check into. The last thing I would do, and I would only, I say this with concerns and worries, because when you move to a new territory, then it's just understandable that your cat's going to experiment, you know, sort of where are the boundaries. So the only possibility I can imagine is that you set up a system where when you do let the cat out, you have people hidden, and I actually did this once, you have people hidden on the boundaries, well away from the road. So if the cat gets anywhere near the road, maybe halfway down the yard or something, people, it sounds horrible.
Jump up.
People jump up, they throw things, they have gunny sacks, they shake, they basically teach the cat, if you go anywhere near this area, it's really, really dangerous. Now,
okay.
That is not 100%. It's a system that, you know, can work for some cats, but it is indeed risky. So I would seriously consider, and I know it's not something that's in the brains of a lot of us right now, it seems like a real new idea, but I would think about some kind of a fenced area for your kitty first, and then go from there.
Yeah. Good luck. And by the way, if you're irritated with Polly put the kettle on, do you say kettle or do you say Polly or you say Polly put the kettle on?
Or Polly, I'm going to turn you into a kettle.
We usually say Polly, but we tease her about making us some tea. I do have a little more of a question, though, because
sure.
I think primarily we're concerned with moving a cat from an old territory to a new territory and afraid that she's going to run off in one of the other areas that isn't as dangerous, but
all right.
She might just get lost.
Okay.
That's why the fence is a good idea.
Yeah, that's another reason why a fence might be a really, really good idea. But safety, you know, safety first. It's a tough one. It's a tough one, I know. And people feel very strongly about whether cats should be kept indoors or whether they should be allowed outdoors. It's your cat. It's your decision. But I would err on the cautious side if I were you.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. 1-800-462-7413, the number to call. Coming up next, find out what the social system of wild cats tells us about our own furry felines. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell. You are listening to Calling All Pets.
Major support for Calling All Pets comes from Dog Tired, the home of American-made premium dog beds, featuring a build-a-bed option where customers choose shapes, fill, size, and fabric options. Designed and tested for man's best friend in Black Earth, Wisconsin. Dog Tired. Information at dawg-tired.com.
I'm Larry Mueller here with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. Patricia, we often hear that cats are not social beings, but you know, I grew up on a farm and we had 20 cats at
right.
least that lived together, and you know, I could pick them up and pet them, and of course we all have fun with our pets. So what's going on here? Are cats social or not?
Well, yes, they are. And no, they're not.
Oh, no.
It's one of those answers. And it turns out that what we call domestic cats, our house cats, are derived from African wild cats who usually live alone. They are indeed solitary animals. But what makes them interesting is that even though the females usually live by themselves and they hunt by themselves, they share hunting grounds with other cats.
So they don't hunt together or they do hunt together?
They don't hunt together. They don't. But what they do is they allow others to hunt on the same area, on the same
oh.
range, as long as they do it when it's not being used.
Oh.
And you know, if you think about it, that's probably one of the reasons why cats... You know, sometimes our cats, you're going to let them onto a screen porch, or maybe you have an indoor-outdoor cat who can go outside safely, and they'll sit at the doorway forever.
Yeah.
When the blizzard blows in,
yeah.
or the rain blows in. What they're doing is they're programmed to sit and wait at the edge of a, quote, territory, and see if the territory is, quote, available. Can they, you know, can
that
they use the territory?
That is interesting. It's also tiresome if you're the one waiting at the door for them to go out.
It certainly is. It is. And it drove me crazy, actually, one winter. It was really cold and the air was blowing in. And I actually had a solution that's worked really well for years for me. All I do is I open the door and I count out loud. 1, 2, 3. And then you shut the door right after you say 3. You don't shut it on your cat, but you just, and you don't wait for your cat. You don't look at your cat. You don't ask your cat. It's just, this is what happens. 1, 2, 3, and the door shuts on 3, and your cats learn within a couple of days. It's like, either I'm going to go now, and usually my cat, Sushi, she's out by 2.5. Or she's not, you know, depending on her choice.
But back to the African wild cats, if they share hunting territories, mm-hmm. but not at the same time, how does that explain the fact that our cats can do so well living with other cats?
Well, yeah, it's a really good question. And I think it's partly answered by the fact that African wild cats are what's called facultatively social animals. Facultatively social.
Wow.
And say that fast many times. What that means, all that means is that they can switch from living a solitary life to a social life depending on the circumstances. And with cats, and it's usually true with most species, the circumstance that makes the difference is how much food there is.
No, surprise, surprise.
You're right. It's all about food. Everything's all about food for both Larry and I. No, that's not true. But it's all about food for many, many animals who are living in the wild. So sometimes you see these African wild cats who are normally solitary, but sometimes you see them living together, especially the females, if there is enough food to go around, which is exactly the circumstance in the barn, for example,
sure,
that you're talking about, in our houses, where we're the one who provide the food. And if there is enough food, it turns out that living together has a great advantage, because if there's enough food, the females can sort of band together and leave their young in groups called creches. So there's one female who stays behind as a babysitter,
oh,
and the others go off hunting. They hunt by themselves, but they can leave their kittens in the care of another female and protect them that way.
Okay, that explains why you can see cats living together in houses or farms.
Yep.
But what about lions? They live in groups and even hunt together like wolves, if I'm not mistaken.
You are absolutely right, and they are the big exception. And, you know, we forget that because we see so much footage of lions hunting together, but they are the exception of the cat world. They are highly social compared to all the other cats, including our cats. You know, sometimes we forget about the North American cats, bobcats, mountain lions. They're all solitary, but lions, highly social, live in prides, hunt together, but they still have a very different social system than dogs or wolves. They don't have an alpha male. They don't have an alpha female. Some cats are more equal than others, but they don't have that sort of complicated social hierarchy like we see in our species and in dogs and in wolves. Although it is true that the females do most of the hunting and the males get to eat first. It's not fair.
It's not fair, but you know what? I'm hungry. I'm hungry for some more phone calls. What do you think about
that?
We're
always hungry, Larry, but we'll take some phone calls.
Here's the number, 1-800-462-7413, and here's our next caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Who are we speaking with?
Well, my name's Stephanie.
And where are you from, Stephanie?
Well, I'm from Indianapolis.
Indianapolis, Indiana. All right. A Hoosier.
Well, not native born. I'm a Buckeye, actually.
Well, all right. Who's your eye?
She's loyal to her native territory. Talking about territories, what can we do for you?
Well, I was calling you about my cat, Phoebe. She's a very wonderful, loving animal, and she especially adores my husband.
Oh, good.
But what she really likes is when you scratch her tail.
Is when you what?
Well, you know where the tailbone and the tail meet?
Right.
She likes to be scratched there, and then she starts licking herself, or whatever is close to her mouth.
Licking herself?
Yes.
So
it's a little trick that we have whenever people come over.
So you can make her lick herself by scratching this little area, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, that makes sense, actually, if you think about it, because grooming sequences are actually, they're one of those behaviors that is a bit hardwired. You know, there's a kind of a neurological circuit. As a matter of fact, people who've studied, and there are people indeed who've studied grooming, and usually, if you watch your cat, you'll notice your cat usually goes through the exact same sequence. They start, you know, doing one thing, and then they move around their body doing everything in exactly the same order every single time they have sort of a grooming session.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things about grooming is that when they feel a particular stimulus, when they're touched in a particular way, it's as though that immediately turns on the grooming neurons, you know, when I'm grossly oversimplifying.
So it's kind of reflexology, sort of.
Yeah, well, yeah, almost, yeah. Sort of maybe one neurological level. It's probably run out of the cerebellum, but so I'm not surprised it can happen. If I were you, I would put it on cue and make it really, really fun. You can turn it into a circus trick, and here's all you have to do is right before you do that little scratch is I want you to say something silly. What would be funny about a cat who's going to then start licking herself? That's that I can say on family radio. Come up with some funny phrase. You know, we might get some emails about that.
That might be.
Send us an email to pets at WPR.org about what they should say. Because if you just say, you know, groom yourself, a horrible example, but just say you use that, then you scratch her little tail. And then she licks herself while you say, good kitty, good girl. If you do that over and over again, eventually when you just say groom yourself, she's going to lick without the scratching. So there, you're going to have this great circus trick.
I love that.
There you go. Let us know how it goes.
Thanks, Stephanie.
All right. Thank you. I
appreciate the call very much. 1-800-462-7413, your number. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Laura from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you.
What can we do for you?
Well, I first of all want to thank you for your show. I have a one-year-old Sheltie who is a little high-strung, is full of energy as a puppy, and within about the last 5 months, she has been circling, hurting, I'm not sure, she's not nipping anything, but circling room to room to room, looking out the windows, nothing's there, just flying through the apartment. Plenty of exercise every day, 3 times a day. And there's nothing we can do as far as distracting her to stop her from running room to room, but basically shut all of our blinds, live in the dark, and throw balls with her from the time we get home to the time we go to bed.
Does she run to the window of each room and look out? Tell me, be like a videotape and describe exactly what she does.
I have videotaped her. What she'll do is maybe she'll start in the living room, get this burst of energy, run into the bedroom, stop midway, no window, no nothing.
All right.
Quickly turn around and run through the living room.
All right.
Into the other bedroom. She might jump up and look out the window if the blinds are closed. She just stops in the middle of the room and just flips around and runs again the other way.
Okay.
And actually, one time she did this so long, I couldn't distract her besides putting her in her kennel, letting her calm down. I couldn't distract her enough. She actually broke the pads, cut her pads, and we had to do Neosporin for 4 days.
Ooh.
Yeah, so now it's becoming more of a physical issue.
Got it.
She looks like she's, you know, needing something to do. We've gotten plenty of toys that are very, you know, mental stimulation. A lot of personal contact with me, and I just don't know what to do.
On the one hand, what you're describing is a typical year-old dog. You know, I call it the frenetics. And they literally, I was telling somebody about my Lassie, who's now 12 and a half. When I got her, she was 11 months old, and she literally bounced off the walls.
Yes.
It is not a metaphor.
Yes,
she literally bounced off the walls. You know what I mean? We're not making it up, right? And so this age is the age where they have all the power. You know, their body has developed enough that they're fast and incredibly powerful, but they're still puppy-brained.
And they
don't have a lot of emotional control. So in one sense, what you're seeing is not atypical. And yes, your dog, just keep up all the exercise. And if she gets out of control, go ahead. It's absolutely fine to just don't punish her, but just very quietly put her in a crate and just have a little time out. But I would also look at what you're feeding her, because there are foods that are designed for sled dogs who are running the Iditarod. And there are foods out there that are called HOT by behaviorists and trainers that basically give dogs more energy than they need. I mean, there's sort of a high-quality problem now is that there's so many good commercial dog foods now, whereas there used to years and decades ago when I was a child before there was electricity.
Way back when.
There weren't so many great choices, and now they're phenomenal choices, but some of them are almost too good in that they have too much energy. So you might want to look at what you're feeding. You might want to talk to your veterinarian, talk to some trainers, talk to a good pet store that has some very educated people about nutrition, and think about switching foods.
Oh, I will. And then if she starts doing this, I mean, she does it 7 times a day, and it's almost like she's got just uncontrollable anxiety. You know, she doesn't know what to do or where she's going. So when she starts this, do I maybe shut the doors to all rooms and just leave her in the living room with us, or do I actually put her in her kennel every time?
I would vary it. It'd be hard to do any one thing 7 times a day.
Yes.
I mean, it'd be fine for us to say theoretically what to do, but, you know, there's theory and then there's life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And putting myself in your shoes, I can't imagine doing the same thing 7 times a day.
Me neither.
I would vary it sometimes, depending on your day and what's going on in your life. Sometimes just put her in her kennel. Make sure it's not punishment. You know, go in your crate. Good girl. Here's a chew toy. Or shut the doors. Ask her to stay with you. And what I do is get her mentally busy. Sit, lie down, roll over, sit pretty, give me five.
Yep.
Can you pray?
Okay.
Play bow. Give her other things to keep her busy. But you got to get this this could turn into a habit.
I know.
You're absolutely right to call now. So see what you can do to get turned around now.
And good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You know, I was thinking maybe they could feed her turkey. Whenever I eat turkey, I want to lay down on the couch.
Get that tryptophan going.
Thanks again for calling. 1-800-462-7413, the number to call. Coming up next, we'll talk to a veterinarian about how to stay fit with Fido. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets.
Even man's best friend has a fault or two, so bring out the best in your pet with advice from Patricia's dog training books. Whether you need help with a multi-dog household or you're feeling guilty about leaving your pet home alone, you can find the information you need online. For a selection of books and training guides available for purchase, call the radio store at 800-747-7444 or log on to our website, callingallpets.org.
Welcome back to Calling All Pets. I am Larry Mueller with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And this week, we welcome Marty Becker to the show. Dr. Becker is the co-author of the book Fitness Unleashed, A Dog and Owner's Guide to Losing Weight and Gaining Health Together. Welcome to the program, Marty Becker.
Oh, thanks, my friends, for having me.
Well, it's wonderful to have you with us. What is the Fitness Unleashed program?
Well, you know, we have to go back and look at why we have the program to begin with. And Patricia knows that you always look for an unmet or undermet need when you're doing a book. And you talk about a big unmet or undermet need. 50% of American people are overweight. And, 66% of American people are overweight. And 50% of American pets are overweight. And they have almost identical health problems. Increased type 2 diabetes. Increased risk of heart problems, joint problems, increased risk of cancer. And we also know that the chubby pets also have behavioral issues, grooming issues. And the problem is you know, there's no bikini season for dogs. You know, they don't put on their pair of pants and go, oh, gosh, the last time my lands, you know, or they don't walk by a mirror and do a double check of the hairy derriere and go, uh-oh, no more Scooby snacks for me. And you know, there's no stick-thin dog models on TV. You know, they don't watch Animal Planet and go, if I did this, I could look like that. So
I never thought of it from that perspective.
And the problem is, Patricia, you'll really find this interesting. In a study of people with overweight pets, 50% of people with overweight pets, when asked to rate their dog's body condition, rated it as ideal.
No kidding.
So we don't recognize the problem. Food equals love. They're more than happy as scavengers to eat anything we put in front of them. And so they just keep getting bigger. And what we don't know is, rather than killing them, you know, there's really this killing them with kindness thing. I mean, they're these little fat cats and tubby pooches are funny in cartoons, but in real life, it's just ticking their lifespan away and the quality of their life.
Just as unhealthy for them as it is for us, right?
Yes, and this is really interesting. Dr. Kushner, who you spoke of as my co-author, the way this book got started, I actually interviewed Dr. Kushner on a radio show, and he wrote the American Medical Association's Physician's Guide to Obesity. So if you were to go to your doctor's office, go into their office and look on their shelf, the Physician's Guide to Obesity was written by Dr. Kushner. He's the director of the Wellness Clinic at Northwestern Memorial Hospital, and a very well-known researcher. He did this study not expecting it to turn out, this study called PPET, People and Pets Exercising Together. And what he was surprised to find out is that people and pets that exercised together both lost weight and kept it off. So then they're, you know, figuring out, well, how did this work? And the main number one reason this worked was because people were taking responsibility for someone they loved. If the doctor were to tell them themselves, well, you know, if you got high blood pressure, you increase risk of stroke, you know, that's why you're limping, you got to lose weight, okay, and then they don't do it. But when they said, listen, Sparky, Fluffy, is in trouble. You know, he's got increased risk of diabetes, cancer, all these things. You have got to start walking him. They go home, oh, my gosh, I went to the vet, and the vet says, this dog has got to lose weight or this is going to happen. And so by taking responsibility for someone they love, they stuck with it. And luckily, the health benefits toggle up both sides of the leash.
So in some ways, it sounds like you're saying that dogs are the ideal workout partner. And do you think in some cases they might even be better than a friend or, you know, going to a club?
Oh, gosh. Thank you for giving me the juicy curveball that you didn't intend to give me.
Oh, my pleasure, Marty.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'll tell you what the deal is here. You could not have a better workout partner for many reasons. One, now this is being honest. I think I always like honesty. When you see somebody that's overweight or obese is starting to exercise, a human, you know, these humans are terrified of Lycra, by the way, and they're finally saying, okay, we'll just start walking, and they're walking on their own. People look at them and go, oh, my gosh, you know, it's about time they got started. How long is it going to take them to lose that weight? And so they feel like it's Jurassic Park, where with every step, you know, there's puddles rippling a mile away, you know. So they're self-conscious. But you hook a dog on there, and the same people that would have ridiculed them under their breath are going, oh, look, they're out for a walk with their dog, you know. Now they're just a nice person. No matter what route you take, what time of day you walk, you feel, even in a different city, you feel safer. Pets reawaken you to the natural world, so you can kind of hitchhike on their acute senses and all of a sudden notice that your neighbor planted a new tree that you've been going by in a blur as you get ready to drive home and, you know, drive inside the bowels of your house and shut the door, not seeing anybody. You get the sunshine vitamin D, which we're knowing is great in moderate doses, where you actually get out and get sunshine, not a dark, you know, exercise room in the basement or a gym. But here's the number one thing is if you have a human workout partner who all decide, okay, we're going to start walking every day at this time, okay, and then the first day everybody shows up, oh boy, this is great, you know, and then about a week later somebody's got a late deadline at work or somebody's got a school function or somebody's not feeling well, somebody's taking a long weekend, and pretty soon it peters out to where, you know, there's no frequency or intensity. But, Patricia, you know this better than anybody else. Once you start walking with the dog, they are going to make your life miserable if you don't go for that walk at that appointed time. They don't have a better offer. They're not looking at their watch going, eh, I'm about done, you know.
They don't care if it's raining.
Don't care.
And you talked a little bit about health problems associated with dogs. And, you know, as you point out in your book, our dogs aren't generally going to live that long, and we can greatly extend the percentage of their time here on Earth with this exercise.
Actually, it's 15%, and that's in a study, a very long-term study, that if you keep your pet near its ideal body weight, it's going to live 15% longer. That's an average of 2 years, and that's really remarkable. Those of us out there that I often joke and say there's only one greatest pet in the world, and every family has it.
Right.
You knew that one simple thing would let them live 15% longer, and plus, as Patricia knows, is not only do the pounds melt away, but a lot of the behavioral problems melt away.
So absolutely.
You're not only helping them on the inside of their body, you're helping them on the inside of their brain. And one thing I'd like to point out, now, remember I said 50% of people with overweight pets rank their bodies, their pet's body condition is ideal.
Yeah.
First thing you have to do is we go through a checklist there. You can tell if your pet is overweight. The first thing you do is just feel along its ribs, and you should feel a very light layer of fat over the ribs. Now we're not talking a dog where the neighbor calls the ASPCA. You know, we're talking a dog where you can just feel it with a very light layer of fat on the ribs. If you're looking at your dog in profile, you should see somewhat of a tucked abdomen like a wasp. Now, like a Slooky is going to have a different tuck than a, you know, a golden retriever, but
sure,
you still should see a tuck. And if you're doing an overhead check, a sky view, you should see an indentation at their waist. You should see somewhat of a tuck there at the waist. If you don't see those three things, you can't feel those ribs very easily, your pet's probably one of the 50% that's overweight or obese. And, you know, if you want to know for sure, you can take it to your veterinarian to find out. But then you just got to get started on a program, and it's going to take, you know, you're only going to lose, kind of a la Weight Watchers, about 1% to 2% per week. So it's going to take 6 to 18 months for this weight to come off this pet.
Patience, not being an American, our finest trait. I think that's something that's important to keep in mind.
Yeah.
I have a question about the relationship between weight and diet. You know, we all know that part of a good weight reduction program is to think about a sensible diet. I would love to hear, as your take as a veterinarian, on what owners need to do to ensure that their dog, their cat, their chubby horse even, is eating a sensible diet.
This is really important. The first thing I want to tell your listeners is never feed free choice. That is absolutely the worst thing you can do. These dogs were scavengers in their wolf life, and they never knew when they were going to eat, and when they got to eat, they'd eat as much as they could, as fast as they could, so you don't want to feed them free choice. You want to measure the food out. They've actually found out that if you're, you know, if you're working with your veterinarian and figuring out what kind of food to feed, there are special diet foods that are, I kind of call it taste great, more filling. they're high fiber, low calorie, low fat foods. You know, some of the ones that you would think about a prescription diet RD, prescription diet WD that a veterinarian has. But they actually are not just light versions of regular food. They're foods that were developed and backed by clinical studies to help pets lose weight safely. So you measure the food out, and then you feed it 2 to 3 times a day. Pets will actually lose more weight if you feed 2 to 3 times a day versus once a day, so you want to split the portions up. And the other part we got to go back to is healthy snacking. Everybody, you know, it kind of reminds me of that old joke about 98% of people do a certain activity and the other 2% lie. You know,
yeah.
If you ask people about, you know, do you give your pets treats, I mean, every veterinarian's going to raise their hand.
Right.
What you want to do, though, is you want to make it no more than 10% of their total caloric intake, and you want to use more healthy snacks. And this is, I'm going to tell you what an example of a healthy snack is, and some of your listeners are going to go, well, that sounds horrible, and they're going to try it, and they're going to think, wow, this pet really likes it. One example is whole baby carrots.
Yep.
They snap, they crunch, and they're sweet, and dogs love them. Frozen green beans are another one. Little apple slices are another one. So it's just a matter, really, you know, you want to feed one of these special diet foods, ideally. You want to measure the food, split the portions, healthier snacking, and really it's just more miles on their feet and less food in their mouth, and your pet's going to safely lose that weight, and then it's going to live a lot longer and be happier.
Marty, you talked about being in the basement exercising and sort of, you know, it gets to be kind of dull. How do you prevent boredom with this workout routine and make sure that we remain consistent with it?
One of the things, Larry, that we do in the book is we talk about ways to increase the intensity, you know, how to walk on a plowed surface, how to get a dog to go up and over obstacles, how to get them to walk in shallow water. So there's lots of things in there that kind of boredom busters that, just some examples is to walk the opposite way on a route, to actually drive to a different place and do a route, to do a zigzag route instead of a straight route, which we typically walk. There's many different ways that we talk about in there, so you kind of get these boredom busters. And another great thing, by the way, is to invite other people to come along with their pets. So it's a whole, you know, different technicolor experience when they're enjoying a walk in the company of another dog.
Well, it's been a great pleasure talking with you today, Marty. I really appreciate you. You got a wonderful book. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. Dr. Marty Becker is the co-author of Fitness Unleashed, A Dog and Owner's Guide to Losing Weight and Gaining Health Together. Don't go away. Our animal trivia question of the week is coming up next with your chance to win a copy of Marty Becker's book. And we'll take more of your calls. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell. You are listening to Calling All Pets.
Major support for Calling All Pets comes from Dog Tired, the home of American-made premium dog beds, featuring a build-a-bed option where customers choose shapes, fill, size, and fabric options. Designed and tested for man's best friend in Black Earth, Wisconsin. Dog Tired. Information at dawg-tired.com.
Yeah. You're listening to Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, along with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And before we go back to the phones, it's time for our animal trivia question of the week. All correct guessers will have their names pooled together, and 10 winners will be selected at random to receive a copy of Marty Becker's book. Here's the question. Which wild feline species is the only one in the world that can't retract its claws? I think I know the answer. If you know the answer, call us at 1-800-462-7413.
You can't win a book, Larry.
You can't win a book?
No, you can't, because you work for the radio show. But there are 10 people listening who can.
I forgot. I thought I could win one.
Aww.
1-800-462-7413, the number to call. To find out the correct answer to this question, be sure to check our website in about a week, and we'll have it posted at callingallpets.org. And now, let's take some more calls. Here's the number again, 1-800-462-7413, and here's our next caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Carl from Rhode Island. How you doing?
Great, Carl. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I have an unusual problem. I know you normally help people out with their own pets, but my problem involves the neighbors.
Okay.
They have four dogs. They let them loose. They have one of those electric invisible fences, and the dogs bark every time we walk outside.
No.
If we walk down the driveway, they bark at us. In fact, during the summer, if we walk down the stairs with the windows open, they bark at us. And periodically, they'll break through that fence and they wind up in our yard.
Mm.
So it's annoying, and I don't want to, I want to do something that makes them stop. And obviously, I don't want to hurt them because
yeah.
I love dogs.
Yeah.
They don't bark when they're home, of course, because it bothers them. When they leave, which they do a lot, then the dogs are out there and barking at us. It's like having a neighbor yell at you across the lot line.
So they leave the dogs loose outside with just an invisible fence when they're actually not home?
Yeah, they
oh,
have a
dear.
Dog door so they can go inside the house. In fact, one afternoon I was working out in the yard all afternoon, and they would come out, they'd bark at me for about 10, 15 minutes, then they'd go back inside and drink some water and take a rest, and then come back out and do it again.
Oh, dear. It's actually dangerous for the dogs because anything can get into the yard, right? You know,
yes.
even
oh,
though
yeah.
theoretically the dogs can't get out. But obviously this is a people problem, not a canine problem.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you one question before I throw out some suggestions. How are your relations with the neighbors? You guys get along well or?
We coexist. I wouldn't say we are close friends.
Okay.
But we're not deadly enemies.
Good. Okay. The reason I was asking is because obviously given that this is a people problem, is sometimes the best thing to do is to actually educate people about what's going on, because so often people are completely unaware of their dog's behavior when they're not home. And so you can say, gosh, your dogs, bark when you're gone and when we're outside in the yard, and it's really compromising our enjoyment of our own yard. It's one thing to hear that. It's a whole other thing to watch a videotape of 10 minutes of their dogs barking continuously. So if there's any way, I've actually had clients who've taken over a pie, along with a tape recording.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can invite them to your house for drinks and a casual barbecue and to bring it up and say, actually we were taping for something, other reason, and we'll just maybe show it to you to see what it's like. If they can see what it's like, very often they'll go, oh, because so often people don't take it seriously. So that's one possibility, trying to influence the human's behavior in some way. The other possibility is to try and directly influence the dog's behavior. And the only thing I can think of, and you would have to clear this with your neighbors, the only thing I can think of is to teach the dogs that when you go outside, you're going to throw treats across this invisible fence, this invisible boundary. So they learn that when you guys go outside, they don't need to bark at you as if you were intruders, because that's basically how they're behaving, is you're intruding
right.
on the territory. So if you teach them that when you come outside, they'll get treats, many dogs will sort of sit down and wait. Oh, here they come. Here come the treats. And so they'll stop barking at you. Now, if they're dogs who just bark because they're excited, they might keep barking. You know, I'd switch anyway. From barking to an intruder, right, to barking to, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, here comes the food. But that doesn't always happen. More often what happens is they stop barking at you because they no longer see you as an intruder.
Good luck, Carl. Thank you very much for calling. You know, Tricia, we heard from a listener named Beth from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and she says her cat Jesse is a yarn thief.
Oh, yeah.
And this, normally, not such a big deal. Except she lives in a yarn store.
Oh, no.
Occasionally, she'll take a ball of yarn out of the bin and carry it through the store, uttering her hunt cry. She usually does this at night when nobody's in the store. But Beth has caught her doing it a couple of times during the day. Most mornings, Beth finds 8 to 10 balls of yarn piled up on the couch or rug. And how can Beth break Jesse of this habit?
How can you stop a kid from eating candy in a candy store?
that's
the vision that I have, is this cat in a yarn shop is like me at a chocolate factory.
It went to heaven.
This is not an easy question for me to answer. Well, no, that's not true. It's an easy question to answer. The answer is, I don't know.
Oh, man.
Here's a suggestion, though. What I would try, if I was you, is I would, first of all, designate a couple of balls of yarn, given that the cat already plays with the balls of yarn. Now, if you're trying to prevent a cat from ever doing that, this is the last thing you'd want to do. But given that you already have the problem, I would designate some old, beat-up, drooled-on balls of yarn mm-hmm. cat has already taken, and make those the okay balls of yarn. You could even put a little catnip inside, do anything to make them extra special. And then the others, for a certain period of time, you're going to have to prevent your cat's access to them. You're going to have to cover the bins, because a lot of this is going to be about logistics, about how to prevent the cat from getting where you don't want the cat to be. Maybe that's those scat mats. Remember, Larry?
Yeah.
These little plastic mats, and they give a shock, just like a carpet shock. It's not mm-hmm. abusive. It's really not. But it's aversive enough that it stops some animals. So that's the trick. Some yarn's okay.
Some yarns not. Okay. And if other people want to email us, they can do that.
We love it. Just send us an email to pets@wpr.org.
pets@wpr.org. And here's the number to call if you have a question, 1-800-462-7413. And here's another caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, Patricia. Hi, Larry. This is Greg from Chicago. How are you?
Well, doing just great, Greg. Thanks for calling.
Well, you're welcome. I have a big and small pet question.
Good. We'll give you a big and small answer.
My wife and I are thinking of getting two dogs. The first dog would be a large dog, and I have an affinity toward the English Mastiff.
Okay.
And my wife would like to have a second dog, either a pug or a puggle.
That would be a match.
My question is, are those two breeds compatible, and we would get them as puppies and get them at the same time, and would it make a difference which one was the male or the female, because we would name them Romeo and Juliet.
And you know, Dave Barry always talks about his two dogs. He had his big dog, and then he had his small dog, which he always called his backup dog.
Yeah. That's right. First of all, it's a great set of questions, and absolutely you can get a great big huge dog and a little tiny dog. There's no question you can do that. I would suggest you get individuals of different sexes, just because you have a smaller likelihood of having tiffs mm-hmm. between them. So one male, one female. I'm not sure it matters so much which is which. What is most important is, frankly, not the breed, but the disposition of the individual animals, because there are some genetically mediated tendencies towards being, say, possessive around objects. So if you got a mastiff, for example, who came from a line who was highly possessive and aggressive about it, around his bones and his toys, and he snapped out and didn't have good bite inhibition and bit your little puggles because your little puggles walked by when he had a favorite toy, that's obviously not where we want to go. That would not be
no.
pretty, right?
Right, right.
So I would get these dogs from very responsible breeders. I would get dogs from breeders who would, without question, take a dog back if it's not the right dog, who would work very closely with you to match up dogs who are just really mellow and good friends. And I think that's the most important part. Don't hesitate to get those two breeds if you feel like it. But again, get them from responsible people. You might want to think about, well, if you get them both together, it is fun to watch puppies play together, but the size difference could be a bit of a problem. You might want to get the Puggles first, the smaller dog first, or I might, if I was me, get one dog first, spend a little time with it, get it a little more emotionally mature before I brought the other one in.
Okay. Now, drooling, Mastiffs, are there breeds that drool less than others, or are they just droolers by nature?
When I thought of a Mastiff, I almost started drooling myself.
I know.
Larry has a drooling problem. We'll address that as a topic.
Maybe that's why he's
show.
On the radio.
No, that's right. No, that's the last problem Larry has. You know, there are actually lines of Mastiff-like breeds that are less likely to drool than others. It depends on how the dog's mouth, sort of the lips around their mouth, the bottom layer is called the flue. And some flues are sort of droopy in the corners, and that's where all the saliva droops out.
Okay.
And others are tighter.
So it flies out of the flue.
It flies out of the flue. So you might want to talk to breeders, because some breeders breed for a tight mouth, a tight flue, that actually results in less drooling.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Send us pictures. We'll put them on the website.
Thanks, Greg. 1-800-462-7413, our number. And thanks to everybody who called this week. It's been a wonderful show, Patricia, hasn't it?
Oh, we've had a great time as usual.
Patricia McConnell is a PhD certified applied animal behaviorist and adjunct associate professor of zoology at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And she's here every week to give you practical advice about your pet's behavior. Calling All Pets is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Our producer is Cynthia Schuster. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Leo Sidran composed our theme music. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, hoping you'll join us again next time for more Calling All Pets.
For a copy of today's show, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0602P and bring out the best in your pet with advice from Trisha's dog training books. If you need help training your new dog, or if you're feeling guilty about leaving your pet home alone, information is available online. Visit our website at callingallpets.org. That's callingallpets.org.
On the next Calling All Pets, discover why the flicker of a firefly isn't always such a pretty thing.
And we'll also talk with an author and professional dog trainer about the best ways to raise puppies and kids together.
Tune in for that and answers to your animal behavior questions on the very next Calling All Pets.